This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of March 8th, 2020. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 124. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. The Is It Just Me commentary. I'll award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a person who is making a difference. You'll hear from Premier John Horgan on BC's response to coronavirus. And a special feature on how the anti-coastal gasoline pipeline protest outside the BC Parliament buildings in Victoria climaxed and concluded. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or did that week in the BC legislature feel like a month? It began with acting clerk Kate Ryan Lloyd being appointed clerk of the legislature. She had been filling the role since Craig James was walked off the property under an RCMP investigation in November 2018. The committee said it received 8 applications and put 3 on the shortlist. Why so few for one of the highest paid jobs of its type on the continent? The secretive process doesn't actually tell the public whether the chosen applicant was really the best for the job. Unlike the United States, there are no confirmation hearings, just a committee that meets behind closed doors, its report, and the vote of the legislature. Yes, the process is flawed, but it did beat the alternative, like the 2011 vote by the BC Liberal majority in the legislature to appoint Craig James as clerk. James resigned in disgrace last year. So what else happened? Well, protesters related to the ongoing Shut Down Canada movement occupied a meeting room at the legislature and had to be taken away by police. Finance Minister Carol James went public with her diagnosis with Parkinson's disease. You'll hear more about those two stories later. Meanwhile, Premier John Horgan got tough with coronavirus. His hand was forced after the previous weekend when Washington State's Governor Jay Inslee declared a state of emergency after the first death in the Evergreen State. Horgan met with reporters on March 7th in Vancouver. This is how it sounded.
Our number one priority, of course, is to keep people safe, to ensure that communities understand that there is a cross-government approach. And today, I'm appointing a deputy minister's committee that will be co-chaired by Deputy Minister Laurie Hall from Emergency Management British Columbia, as well as Stephen Brown from the Ministry of Health. This deputy minister's committee will guide a whole government approach to this pandemic and ensure that we are as prepared as we could possibly be. And in addition, that committee will report to a committee of cabinet that will be co-chaired by Minister Dix and I, that will include Finance Minister Carol James, Labour Minister Harry Baines, Public Safety Minister Mike Farnworth, Tourism Minister Lisa Baer, and Economic Development Minister Michelle Mungall. And I want to, at this point, thank every healthcare practitioner, every nurse, every doctor, every care aide, every health sciences professional for the extraordinary work they've been doing to ensure that British Columbians can have confidence in our public institutions when it comes to addressing this issue. Healthcare professionals are at the foundation of everything that we do. And I know Dr. Henry, in her work with administrators and with healthcare providers, can give you more details on that. But it is truly heroic work. And we oftentimes overlook and neglect saying thank you to those people who put themselves at risk, put themselves in harm's way to ensure that we're protecting the public across the board. And I just want to acknowledge that today. But we're ready to respond as conditions change. BC's pandemic province coordination plan is already underway. This deputy minister's committee will ensure that we are as topical and timely with information to you as we can possibly be.
This is for the premier on the theme of rugby sevens, Canada sevens. Public gatherings are a concern, and this is starting to touch the sports world. This is going ahead, and the people of BC Place are confident they can do it safely. Last year you attended, sat in the public, you had a good time. Are you going to go this year and sit in the public again and show your confidence in attending a public event here in British Columbia?
I'm not going to be attending the Rugby Sevens this weekend, and I'm saddened by that from a personal perspective, but it has nothing to do with concerns about my health and well-being or those that would attend. I would take advice from Dr. Henry. Those who are passionate about rugby, as you and I are, attend if you have tickets. Good for you. But if you're ill, stay home. It's not just work we're talking about. It is public gatherings. If you're not well, you should not commingle with your neighbors and with fellow citizens. But it's not my reason for not being at the Rugby Sevens has nothing to do with COVID-19. It has everything to do with, firstly, not having a ticket, and secondly, having other things I need to do. But it will be an exciting event. There were a number of Fijians that I met last night who were very excited, and I was at a breakfast this morning with the Consul General from Ireland, and he says that the Irish team's here this year and they're going to do very, very well.
And just one more question on the plan. You're talking about redeployment in a variety of areas. What about redeploying the mass communication resources? You're currently running ad campaigns for the budget, for the ICBC reform, for the child care program, all items which are important to the cabinet and your party. But at this time, are you going to redeploy resources, substitute those messages out and put messages in that are about coronavirus?
Well, I would argue those issues are not just important to me, they're important to the public, and that's why we're advertising them. But certainly public service announcements are part and parcel of the plan that going forward, and we'll be working as a cabinet with advice from the Deputy Minister's Committee on the appropriate time to make those public service announcements. I want to commend all of the media outlets here today and those that have been following this at the regular briefings that are being delivered by Minister Dix and Dr. Henry. That gives me confidence that the public, through the media outlets represented here, have a high level of understanding of the challenge here. But I don't dismiss your point, and we're certainly going to look at that in the range of options we have at our disposal.
The legislature resumes March 23rd. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. Fiona Sun in the South China Morning Post: Hong Kongers caring for special needs individuals at breaking point as vital services are scaled back. 9 out of 10 Hong Kongers caring for family members with special needs have felt increasingly helpless amid the coronavirus epidemic, a new survey calling for government financial support shows. The city's attempts to contain the highly infectious disease has led to the closure of its kindergartens, primary and secondary schools until April 20th at the earliest, while the Social Welfare Department and some NGOs have cut back their services to reduce infection risks. The survey was initiated by Labour Party lawmaker Fernando Chung and released at a press conference. It polled 1,400 respondents between February 27th and March 4th, with 90% of those surveyed women and 72% acting as full-time carers. Margot Roosevelt in the Los Angeles Times: Truckers, dock workers suffer as coronavirus chokes LA, Long Beach ports cargo. Many American companies had bulked up inventories last year in advance of the Trump administration's steep tariffs on Chinese imports and have plenty of goods on hand, but they could soon face serious consequences of the virus: a dearth of crucial parts for American factories, shortages of consumer products on store shelves, and less demand for U.S. exports. Trade with China normally accounts for roughly half of the containerized goods flowing through the twin ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach. Now, with Chinese factories operating at about 40% of capacity, business at the San Pedro Bay complex is dwindling. The two ports project a 15% to 17% plunge in cargo volumes in the first quarter of this year, as compared with the first 3 months of 2019, a drop of more than 500,000 container units. Imports usually slow around the Chinese New Year, but shippers have canceled 60 vessel sailings for the first quarter of this year, nearly twice the normal number. The 12 terminals across the two ports have been shutting down for days at a time. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest. Hannah Ferfaro in the Seattle Times: University of Washington, other area colleges suspend on-site classes in response to coronavirus. The announcements dropped like rain on March 6th. In the morning, the University of Washington made plans to suspend classes on its three campuses beginning Monday. Then came similar news from Seattle University, Seattle Pacific University, and Northeastern University's satellite campus in Seattle. At the UW, officials are asking instructors to hold classes and exams remotely until the winter quarter ends March 20th. The move will affect more than 48,000 students in Seattle, nearly 6,000 in Bothell, and about 5,300 in Tacoma. Classes will use Zoom Pro or Skype teleconferencing to continue. UW hospitals and clinics, dining and residence halls and recreation facilities will remain open with stepped-up cleaning efforts. Hillary Borid in the Oregonian, 20 bills that died in the Oregon legislature after Republicans walked out. Oregon's legislature was supposed to meet for 5 weeks, but 3 weeks in, Republicans walked out and day after day stayed away. Unable to pass bills, Democrats gave up Thursday and abruptly adjourned the session. For now, the Republicans killed the Democrats' carbon cap bill. What else died on the order paper? Bills about forest health, homeless shelters, affordable housing, independence for the state transparency watchdog, community mental health treatment, tax measures, school breakfast program expansion, and caps on insulin costs. And these were some of the headlines in the Breaker.News this week. Before shutdown Canada 2020, there was Power Shift 2019. The young rose to protest nationally a year after Ottawa Conference, a collaboration with Ben Miljure of CTV News Vancouver. And David Sidhu's fraud trial tentatively set for January 2021. And BMW Canada tells Cullen Commission that BC needs the return of Ports Police. Read the stories behind these headlines. Go to thebreaker.news. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. Another chapter in the colorful history of British Columbia's 123-year-old Parliament buildings. And it happened in the middle of the busy week before the legislature's March break. Protesters were occupying the legislature's front steps, driveway, and lawn for 10 days. They were there to support the Wet'suwet'en Hereditary Chiefs and protest against the Coastal GasLink pipeline. This occupation lasted longer than the one that was disbanded by a mid-February court injunction. Speaker Darrell Plekis asked a judge to ban blocking of doors after protesters tried to shut down the building on Throne Speech Day, February 11th. On March 4th, NDP Indigenous Relations Minister Scott Fraser convened a meeting with some of the protesters in the Rattenbury Room, so named for Francis Rattenbury, the architect of the 1897 completed Parliament buildings. Fraser was fresh from a weekend deal with Wet'suwet'en Hereditary Chiefs aimed at resolving title to their territory. They agreed to disagree on the pipeline as Coastal GasLink resumed work the next day. Victoria police eventually dragged five of the protesters out of the legislature and arrested them for mischief. The mob outside, as Premier John Horgan described them, tried to block police vehicles from leaving around 1:30 a.m. on March 5th. By the middle of the morning, protesters began to pack up. I spoke with Alan Mullen, Chief of Staff to Speaker Darrell Plekis.
At approximately 6 in the evening on Wednesday evening, Minister Scott Fraser, who's the Minister of Indigenous Relations and Reconciliation, essentially invited six of these protesters in to, have a sit-down conversation, a respectful exchange. I think his thinking on that was he wanted to, advise them what had happened at the prior weekend in Smithers when he and the Federal Minister of Indigenous Relations attended Smithers and met with chiefs. He wanted to relay that to the local protesters here in an attempt, I think, to say, look, we are in negotiations. You might want to stand down until we see how those negotiations go. That meeting was contingent, as is any meeting or negotiation. I mean, there's always a mutual understanding and agreement. And the agreement of this one was that they would come into the building, they would meet with a minister, and I take my hat off to Minister Fraser for doing this. I mean, a sitting minister to invite protesters in to the legislature when it is closed, when the House is sitting, to have that meeting in good faith, I think is such an olive branch. I think it was a tremendous idea. Those protesters agreed to those terms. The terms were, we will come in, we will meet with you when the meeting is over, whatever the outcome, we will leave. So that was their commitment. That was the minister's commitment. And once that meeting had concluded, they did not uphold their end of the deal. They refused to leave. They advised the Sergeant at Arms staff, the Protective Services group, that they were not going to leave. And subsequently, we in the Speaker's office were contacted and the decision was made that the Protective Services group would contact Victoria Police to have these protesters who were now refusing to leave be arrested.
In question period on March 5th, the opposition BC Liberals accused Fraser of being naive and putting the legislature's security in danger. Here is what Fraser said.
We received a request for a meeting with the protesters outside who have been there for probably 2 weeks now, Honorable Speaker. Last night I met in good faith with the delegation of the Indigenous youth who have been protesting, obviously, and I wanted to share with them the work that we're doing with the Wet'suwet'en Hereditary Chiefs to make the historic progress on rights and title. My hope, Honorable Speaker, was to convince them to give space to the Wet'suwet'en people as they consider the agreement and to end the protest, Honorable Speaker. We had a respectful discussion. It was witnessed by a member, the leader for the third party, the member from Saanich North and the Islands, and I want to thank him for agreeing to do that, Honorable Speaker. There was an agreement that we had a respectful discussion, but there was an agreement and a commitment that they did not honour, that they would leave following the event. But, Honourable Speaker, I'm deeply disappointed, obviously, that they broke their word.
Adam Olson, the interim leader of the Green Party, had joined Fraser for the meeting. Olson is a member of the Sartlip First Nation.
Entirely cordial and informative and actually really positive. I mean, other than the fact that, you know, the Indigenous youth were very clear that what they were demanding was something that government was definitely not and has been very consistent on not willing to do, which is to have CGL leave the territory. The exchange of information, the exchange of experiences from the minister's perspective, but more powerfully from the perspective of the Indigenous youth, primarily the young women that were there, sharing their experience about what it's like to grow up on a reserve. And that exchange was incredibly important. And I think what's the most unfortunate aspect of this is that there was some suggestion that the talks broke down. I was asked to be a witness of that in a way that is very much in keeping with the Saintnitch tradition of being there to witness and being able to share the experience once that meeting is over. And I would say that it's not correct to suggest that the meeting was broke down and the talks broke down. There wasn't an agreement. That's true. The meeting ended in a very cordial way, shook hands with every member that was there. They were grateful for it. They asked to... they asked if they could have 10 minutes to caucus so that they could then coordinate the message that they were going to deliver their supporters. Very clear that they didn't want to be deceptive. And that's important, I think, to highlight. And I left. I went out of the room. I felt very positive that while there wasn't an agreement that either side was, you know, that there was much movement, there was definitely a very important conversation that was undertaken in a very good way. And then they decided, unfortunately, to just not leave. And I think that's where it becomes really problematic, because they'd built goodwill in the room and they had articulated in a very powerful way the challenges that they face. And I think that there was definitely a much better understanding going out of that. But I think that it then gets to the distraction is that they decided to leverage that opportunity, and I think that it, you know, from talking to my colleagues, I think that there's a lot of people that focused on that rather than focused on the good work that they had done.
Protest leader Takaya Sierra Blaney webcast the sit-in live from the Rattenbury Room on Facebook after Fraser and Olson had left the room. Blaney said they took action because of the pipeline, which is permitted by the provincial government and supported by the elected Wet'suwet'en Band Council, but not the hereditary chiefs.
And he stated that he will not stand with us. He will not exercise his power to ask Coastal GasLink to stand down. And so we are staying here until Coastal GasLink is removed from Wet'suwet'en territories, or we are removed from this building.
The Facebook webcast showed Sergeant-at-Arms Greg Nelson's failed attempt to negotiate the protesters' exit. Blaney, who vowed to stay, left the sit-in in order to rally supporters outside.
So what I want to tell you is the situation you're in. Like, we all believed in good faith that this was moving forward in a very positive way, and we invited you into the House for that reason. It was at the request of Minister Fraser and also the other MLA, Adam Olson. Everybody felt very good about this, that it was moving forward very positively, and that we were trying to respect what you're trying to do here and also understand what your needs were, right? Mm-hmm. By occupying the office and doing this, it takes it up a whole other level. We're at the position now where we have to call in Vic PD, and we would rather see you leave voluntarily. I do not want to see you get arrested.
One of the protesters spoke calmly to Facebook viewers and enjoyed pizza that had been lifted through the window.
We are here peacefully. We're not breaking anything. You know, no matter what the media tells you tomorrow, you know, we're here in a good way. We're simply sitting in an empty office with a nice window, with a nice crowd of lovely people outside.
Hey,
Vic PD's in the building. Pizza's not pipelines. Oh yeah.
Yes.
So apparently Vic PD's here. So I should get in this slice. This is great pizza, by the way. I highly recommend. This is from Fresh Slice. Pizza of the Resistance. Definitely shout out to Fresh Slice.
Blaney addressed supporters outside the back of the legislature near a parking lot where two police vans waited. She recited the names of her comrades who remained inside.
Ajaja, a relative of mine, was arrested in there. And I am worried about her safety. I'm worried about the safety of Ace Harry, Navidu Taylor, Saul Brown, Colin Sutherland Wilson. And Shaylin Sampson. These are all people that I love dearly, who have demonstrated what leadership looks like when Canada fails to, when John Horgan fails to, when Justin Trudeau fails to. That is what these young Indigenous leaders have demonstrated today. And it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate that they are criminalized for trying to generate accountability within this country. This is a failure on Canada. If Canada had exhausted all avenues, if John Horgan had met with Wet'suwet'en hereditary chiefs, we wouldn't be in the direct line of criminalization right now.
Ellen Mullen, the Speaker's Chief of Staff, described the difficulty that police had in leaving the building.
It took a number of hours for the police to, you know, they arrested them, they you know, chartered them, and but it took a number of hours for them to actually be able to leave the building and remove these folks from the building. And the reason for that was there was hundreds of people outside the building, and obviously the Victoria Police is always going to operate in the safest possible manner. It was a very fluid situation. They had to continually assess and reassess as to which exit they should go out, you know, what was the least likely opportunity for violence or you know, injury or harm to anybody, it being the protesters, the folks outside, as well as the you know, the safety of the Vic PD officers. So they did ultimately remove them at about 1:15 in the morning. Yes, some of the protesters refused to obviously leave of their own volition, so they had to be carried out. Obviously, protective services and the sergeant at arms were in attendance and assisting in that process. But a huge show of police presence and police support, which to me is. You know, so unfair on the city of Victoria, so unfair on the Capital Regional District. And we talk about the fact that these folks have the democratic right to protest and the right to be heard. Well, the people in Victoria have the right to have the access and coverage of their police force. And last night that was certainly taken away from them. I don't believe that's fair. We had a lot of officers here for quite some period of time, and obviously if they're here, they're not responding to calls in the Greater Victoria area. So to me it's a really fine line, but like I said, we're the biggest fans of peaceful protest, but as soon as you break the law, as soon as you cross over that line of it's not respectful, it's not peaceful, or it's unlawful, then that will never be tolerated. That will never be tolerated in this place, and it should never be tolerated in any place. They were prepared. Obviously, they have officers on the ground here at the legislature when there's a protest going on or whatever the case, but they certainly weren't expecting what we saw on Wednesday night. You know, I just think it was such a grossly unfair waste of the police time. They did have to call in reinforcements, and I know they did call in members who were not on shift in on overtime just as that support. But like I've previously stated, Bob, everybody has a right, you know, to be heard, but everybody also has a right to be protected and feel safe by their police force. And that was taken away in large extent for the people of Victoria last night.
We're leaving in a place of strength. We're leaving in a place of power.
That is the voice of one of the protesters, Katie George Jim, a member of the Sauk First Nation, on March 5th, as the protesters dwindled from hundreds to dozens and they packed up their gear under overcast skies.
So today we had a closing ceremony here, and it's also to respect and honor the folks that have put so much time, energy, and power into us being here. So it's respecting people's capacity to share with the community that is gathered. And so it's also to signify that this is the beginning. And so this is, we're going into a new part of our transformation as a community, to gather, to share and have that space together that won't be necessarily in the face of violence, in the face of white supremacists, in the face of police officers while we sleep, in the face of security officers while we're trying to share songs. So we are looking to gather and re-meet and continue those relationships from today on.
Alan Mullen, Chief of Staff to Speaker Daryl Pluckis.
They're packing up on March 5th because they were going out on a high note. I just fail to see where the high note is in this. When you cross the line, I'll echo Premier Horgan's comments and sentiment from during the week. At what point you got to ask yourself, does this become counterproductive? You're trying to get your message out there. You're trying to garner support. But showing up at a private citizen's home, whether he's the premier or not, is never acceptable in any way, shape or form. Breaking the law, forcing yourself to be arrested and charged criminally is just never going to fly in a democratic society and a law-abiding society. The rule of law must always be respected. When does your actions become counterproductive? You're trying to get your messaging out and it gets lost in you know, sort of the cloud of you're crossing the line or you're not crossing the line. So I'm not sure it was a win for anybody last night. It certainly wasn't a win for the legislature or for Victoria Police or our protective services. And I don't believe it was a win for the folks that got arrested. I mean, everybody will listen and everybody will engage when it's done in a peaceful and respectful manner. But when you cross over into breaking the law and in contravention of the criminal code, we're going down a very different road. We are currently now on a 2-week break where the members are no longer in the legislature. They're back in their constituencies doing their good work there. But let me tell you, when we return to session, a lot of the things that we have let go out of that mutual respect will not be let go. It is not okay to be lighting fires on the precinct. It is not okay to put up tents. And those fires, you know, putting smoke into the building and affecting some of our staff. Moving forward, I think we've shown a great deal of restraint and leniency. But, you know, time and time again, when those olive branches are extended, whether it be by the legislature, the Speaker's office, or ministers of the Crown, and those olive branches are essentially put in the wood splitter, I'm thinking it's time to dial it back here.
On March 6th, the legislature reopened to the public. The virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting. Every week, we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to a person or group that is making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to British Columbia Finance Minister Carol James, who went public with her diagnosis with Parkinson's disease on March 5th. The former NDP leader will not run in the 2021 election, but she pledges to remain as finance minister as long as she manages the symptoms. She gets the virtual Nanaimo Bar this week because she wants to use her public profile to help others who are living with Parkinson's. This is what she had to say.
I do think it's important for me to be open with what I'm facing. And it's also because I'm not unique. There are between 10,000 and 13,000 people in our province who are living with Parkinson's. And many of those people worry about the stigma. What will happen if they reach out for support? So speaking about my health helps one person feel comfortable to reach out, then it's worth it.
You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of March 8th, 2020. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on March 8th in 1775, Thomas Paine published African Slavery in America in a Pennsylvania newspaper? Paine called for the abolition of slavery. In 1863, President Abraham Lincoln issued the Emancipation Proclamation to free slaves. Here in British Columbia, the first governor, James Douglas, according to Terry Glavin in the Georgia Strait in 2007, was an abolitionist. Colonialism brought an end to slavery among indigenous tribes along the northwest coast of North America. But slavery is not dead yet. In the 21st century, more than 20 million people are estimated around the world to live in slavery. Now you know. Send me your feedback and send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.